Kia ora, hello, and welcome to Bod Almighty, the practical how-to podcast helping you feel better about your body, have a peaceful relationship with food, and go out into the world with confidence. Everywhere we turn these days, someone is telling us to love your body. But how?
Well, by listening to this podcast is how.
That's right. We are your hosts, Hannah Tunnicliffe
and Michelle Sokolich. Without further ado, let's get started. Dr. Jen Hardy is a licensed psychologist with a private practice in Maryville, Tennessee. She graduated with a PhD in counseling psychology from Penn State University in 2010. While there, she received specialized training in psychodynamic and feminist therapy, attachment theory, and career-related issues. Wanting to help a larger audience than could ever fit on her clinical schedule, she writes on Instagram about relationships, career issues, resilience, self-compassion, and whatever else is on her mind. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm glad that we were able to do this chat.
So today we're going to talk about how to understand binging. So a lot of people will have experienced binging. They might call it by another name. And I'm just so excited to talk, to sort of broaden the lens and talk about binging in a broader sense. But can you explain to us or give our listeners an idea about what is the binge restriction cycle?
Yeah, you'll hear therapists and other health professionals who specialize in eating disorders talk about the idea of a binge restrict cycle, meaning that if we pull back and look at behaviors, not just in the moment or in an hour, but we look at behaviors over time, we'll notice that people are swinging on a pendulum from what they deem feeling very out of control with a particular behavior to trying to compensate for a binge. So maybe ingesting more food than they had meant to, or they felt in control to do, or felt comfortable to do, and then restricting later as a way to compensate. And sometimes people engage in what we call purging behaviors. So the idea of how do I get the food out? But we realize not all restriction has to do with purging. Sometimes it's just restricting in another type of way.
And so with it being in a cycle, does that mean that it needs each other? So the binging needs the restriction to continue, kind of thing? Like it's a cause and effect?
Sure. It's like swinging back and forth on the pendulum. Neither are sustainable. And so you find yourself rocking back and forth. One compensates for the other. And people will always say, well, how do I get out of this? Because they'll feel this kind of wave flowing back and forth, and they don't like it. In particular, they don't like the binging, right? And they'll say, how can I just get to only restriction? So they identify the binge as the problem, right? It's this thing that must be ridded from their life. But if the hard truth is, in order to get rid of binges, we have to focus on restriction, because restriction is really what drives binges. A lot of people initially will say, no, I think it's the binge that's driving the restriction because I'm compensating. But what we actually find is that our bodies are compensating for the restriction. Our bodies are always fighting to stay in homeostasis. They're fighting to stay safe and regulated, and are very tuned in to scarcity. And so our bodies tend to see restriction as, oh no, I do not have access to something that I need. I need to fix this and get to homeostasis. And that's why these urges can be very intense to eat, to binge, because our bodies are saying, boy, we don't know when we're going to be able to get access to food again. It looks like it's pretty inconsistent here, so I better eat while I can.
And so where does people will talk about willpower. Can you tell us about how willpower does or doesn't, or sometimes does or doesn't, play into the cycle?
Yeah, I think willpower is all about driving restriction. I think there are so many social messages of people saying, oh, if you really want it, you can do it. If you just have to set your mind to it. And all of us can think of instances in our life where we have needed to be persistent. And we have said, I've done this hard thing that I wasn't sure if I could do, but I've really set my mind to it and I was able to do it. And so we can say, see, there are times it works. But I don't think that that is something that creates sustainable change over time, particularly when we are depriving ourselves of things that we need.
And are there some people that can restrict and not binge? Is it sort of a personality thing, or is it more of a like a physical thing, thing that is that will happen to everybody?
I don't know that we can predict who will be finding themselves in more of a bulimia, binge eating type of cycle, and who may find themselves in an anorexia or anorexia-like pattern of behavior. But the staying stuck in restriction is likely going to be more of anorexia nervosa-like behaviors.
Yeah.
Now, even in people with anorexia, you'll see over time that the body starts taking over because of the restriction. The body doesn't want to be malnourished if it can get nourishment. And so it's going to, even with people with anorexia over time, they will likely be able to identify periods where they too have binged.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because we do seem to put the brain or willpower or, you know, on a pedestal, and we think we are in charge. Our brains are in charge of our bodies. But I guess what I'm getting from what you're saying is that actually there are some really strong physical drives that mean that our body takes over and takes charge.
Yeah, definitely, because it knows what it needs.
Yeah.
If we find ourselves craving a food, I always like paying attention to, okay, I'm craving this food. Can I approach myself with curiosity and say, why might I be craving this food? And there are times where I'm like, oh, I think I must be a little dehydrated, or I'm craving salt, or oh, I just really need fats. I must not be having enough fats, or this calcium, or whatever. Our body is in tune to its nourishment, and it's going to try to steer us towards a diet that gives it what it needs to be healthy.
So you can sort of be accidentally restricting, I guess, by just having, you know, you were saying like, oh, my body's craving fat. So, you know, is it kind of, can it be that subtle?
Well, and I don't know that it's necessarily based on restriction. It just might be that I'm eating the food that's available right now, or this is what's convenient to me, or I've gone through the course of my day. And I love the Tiffany Rowe, if you follow her on Instagram, or she'll say like, I forget what her phrasing is, but like, kind of, what do I feel like eating? And just getting curious and listening to her body and saying, I'm feeling like this, or I'm feeling like that. And it requires some amount of privilege in terms of time and money to be able to always immediately, you know, meet that demand. So sometimes we have to say, okay, but I cannot go and get tacos from that restaurant tonight because that doesn't fit in the budget. But how might I honor that in a different way? So it's not necessarily restricting. It's just kind of tuning into how our body needs change over time.
I love that.
I think this would be a really cool time to think about an exercise that we spoke about, Jen, for our listeners, get them to think about how restriction leads to binging and how the cycle is unhelpful. So something we spoke about was to get listeners to think about New Year's resolutions that they have set or have set in the past, and how well did they work for you? And a word that you used, which I thought was really helpful, was sustainability. How sustainable were those resolutions?
Yeah, I think that lots of people will jump on certain initiatives because somebody else is doing this, or it sounds like a good idea, or they're getting social reward when people say, what's your resolution? And then you say it, and they're like, oh, wow, good for you. But they may not really be practical given what the demands in your life are. I was really proud of myself in January 1st, 2020. Do you know what my New Year's resolution was?
What? Avoid a pandemic.
Yeah. I would have failed. It was eat more barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
It was perfect because it was nicely vague, because there's no like magic amount of times that I need to be eating. I think it was more of like a goal of, I want to have some fun, and I want to give myself permission to have this food that I never remember to have, because I live in the American South where they have really great barbecue. And I am not from here. I'm not from a place that's not like in my culture to be eating those. And so it was nice because it wasn't restricting.
Yeah.
There was no moral value. It was completely sustainable and it was a little fun. And it ended up being great for 2020 when like the world shuts down.
So you managed to get lots of barbecue.
Yeah.
I'm now craving barbecue. Yeah. I think maybe I'm tapping into that. Maybe I need some protein. I think I need some travel, actually. Yeah, I think actually yeah. What I want is I just want to come see you and have some barbecue because that sounds good.
I can hook you up. But when you think about New Year's resolutions, so much of the time they're just not sustainable because people will say things like, I'm going to run a mile every day of the year.
Yeah.
Okay, and what if you get the flu?
Yeah, and they're often really punitive as well. Like I'm thinking back for my own self and what I would have done in the past was I won't do this or I'll do more, you know, like it was a very kind of in that tone of like, I need to be better. You're not doing good enough. So this is what I need to do. And this year I actually, and last year as well, I turned it around and just for the first time I went, actually, yeah, like you, what can I do that, what did I love from last year and what will bring more joy into this year? And I kind of flipped it around like that because, yeah, I think that's so good, so much better.
Absolutely. Especially the amount of stress that we all are experiencing in a pandemic. Okay, I don't need to be adding stress. I need to be finding some lightness and some joy and care.
And so expanding this out a little bit, we've spoken a lot about food and binging relationship to food. But you've mentioned on your Instagram, which is genius, by the way, everybody should go and check it out.
Yeah, I love it too.
That binging restriction shows up in our lives in other areas as well. So you've encouraged people to think about where this cycle might show up for you in other areas. Can you give us some examples?
Sure. I think that we can see this with money and spending patterns, exercise, our balance between the times when we can have play and fun versus work, time with friends, really anything where we are setting up strict rules, rigid rules around what's okay enough for us. How much, you know, it could even be on how much sleep people are allowed to have, how many hours they're expecting themselves to work. And it happens when people are setting these unsustainable expectations up for themselves.
So the restriction is where you need to focus. Where are you giving, where are you setting unsustainable restrictions? Is that what you would suggest?
Yeah, sure. So an example that I talked with you about is when people really start micromanaging their budget and they probably have some type of savings goal. And there are these financial programs that you can join where they will say, you have to justify every expense you make. You have to save all of your receipts. You've got to itemize all of this, like be so like hovering and smothering of yourself because you are wild and you must be tamed because you're just out of control with your spending. And I don't know that that's always the case for some people, but what I find happens, because I've never participated in one of these programs, you can never talk me to that. They just the idea of that stresses me out. But what I've seen in friends is, I remember years ago sitting at a restaurant with a friend and she pulls out her wallet and it's full of these envelopes. And I'm like, why do you have bunch of envelopes in your wallet if you don't mind us asking? And she's like, oh, we're on this savings program. We save so much when we're on it. I mean, we do terrible as soon as we're off the program, but we do such a good job of saving money.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, what are your reactions to that? My reaction, I guess, is, well, what purchases are you delaying until you like, quote, fall off the wagon of this financial diet because it isn't accounting. Because I would be like, so how do you like account for things like unexpected expenses? That's not really a good answer for what happens if the transmission goes out in your car.
Yeah.
Well, you adjust the budget.
See, that's interesting to me because we used to do the envelope thing ages ago. Now we do it in accounts. So it's all, you know, digital in our account. And we have like, you know, different accounts that we put money into. But for me, that feels like we're pretty, you know, we're not super intense with it. We've got like the fund for when unexpected things do come up. We don't. So I wonder if the red flag is the all or nothing, or the intenseness of it.
Black or
like,
white.
Yeah, the really black and white, you know, like I have to do this and I'm doing this every day, you know, like, do you think that's where the red flag is?
Yeah, and probably in the intensity of the savings plan.
Yeah.
If they could just kind of loosen up and set more realistic goals on how quickly they save up money, then there is room for adapting to, oh, my friend's having a birthday party.
Yeah.
So I can go and I can eat at the restaurant too, because we can kind of flex our budget around. Whereas she didn't eat with us because she had already spent her money. So she, and that's fine that she could come out and have water with us. But I'm thinking, boy, it kind of takes away the fun to not be able to fully participate. But I think it's all on kind of how rigid the rules are. And also, it doesn't sound like you are placing moral judgments of I'm being good or I was
right. Yeah, that's so true. And then now just thinking about, like, you know, taking it back to food again. Like, yeah, gosh, it's so clear how, yeah, I'd never thought of putting it into other areas of my life, but yeah, that makes so much sense.
As you said previously, there's an underlying message around you being a wild, uncontrollable animal who can't be trusted. And I think that's really key, is to understand whether your behaviors are reflective of having certain judgments about yourself and that morality, you know, I'm a bad person, I can't be trusted. And when you are eating flexibly or spending flexibly or whatever, it's, you know, that it's because that morality isn't there. You're not judging yourself for being untrustworthy or out of control.
Yeah, and I think likely we can look back to earlier experiences in our life around the beliefs and emotions that are tied to something. So there could be people who say, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of stress or negative or extreme messaging around money. So it just doesn't hold the intensity for me that maybe it does for my partner.
Yeah.
And realizing, like, okay, part of the relationship with money is also like our relationship to our beliefs and our emotions about money. The same could be true of food. It could also be about pleasure and fun, and what rules maybe do we assign to how much fun am I allowed to have before I'm being, I don't know, lazy.
Yeah, no, I'm hearing you. I'm like, I'd love to jump in and like get from each of us maybe something that we can think of for ourselves. Like for me, it's like, It's spontaneous purchases.
Yeah.
It's the dopamine hit, like add to cart and like, you know, for sure there's something in there that I think is maybe perhaps related to a binge restrict cycle. Also social media, I would say. And then, and then productivity. I'm obsessed with, you know, being productive and being busy and how much sort of relaxation I'm allowed. I'm not sure if that comes up as a binge restrict cycle, but as you're talking about how much fun am I allowed to have, that really chimed for me.
Yeah, that might be a clear thing to explore for you around productivity. Because I know for me as a creative person, I've got to just ride the waves of creativity. And I don't think it's about restriction and binging so much as I got to try to seize the energy when it finds me and if I can have time to spend with it, right? But also making sure that I am leaving space in my day-to-day life where I can be creative and allow that, cultivate that part of myself.
That's so cool. I'm curious about, you mentioned social media. Like, I can't think, how does the binge restrict cycle show up there?
Oh, if you take an app off your phone, and you restrict yourself, or you say, I'm a crappy person for looking at it too much and I'm going to take it off my phone. And then you put it back on and you go nuts.
I got you. Okay.
And the apps are designed for binges, right? The creation of the infinite scroll.
Yes.
Or you skip to the bottom of a feed.
Yeah. And you'd feel like, I'm done. I can turn off now.
But the apps have been changed so that there is no bottom. And there's no cue to say,
yes,
you've been here for 10 minutes. How are you feeling? Do you want to stay on or what do you want to do? There's no external reminders. And so then people feel, you know, out of control, perhaps, or they're relying on this as a way to cope with stress. And they find themselves saying, I'm not really living aligned with my values. I'm spending 3 hours a day scrolling social media. Mm. And I have a lot of other things that I could be doing that feel more meaningful.
So for me, I think what's been helpful in that regard is to consider why I want some boundaries on social media, and then set up some boundaries or some, I've rearranged the display of my phone based on some advice that I found. And so it's around just kind of supporting myself to not be as distracted by it, as opposed to, you know, that's it, it's, I'm cutting it out of my life. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, but I'm just saying, I think that for me, because I do have quite clear binge restrict cycles in my life, and I've experienced them very pointedly and marked in my eating, that it can be useful for me to actually dig a bit deeper, figure out what's going on first, then figure out, you know, what I want my relationship to be like, and then set up boundaries that are more sustainable.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's what I'm hearing too, is that quick check-in and saying, how am I feeling? And is this going to actually satisfy that feeling? If I'm feeling lonely, hopping on Instagram is probably not going to help me feel connected and heard. Maybe I reach out to a friend.
And the same with that binge restrict cycle around food, is that actually the binge can give you a lot of information.
Mm.
Like if you, rather than trying to deny the binge or get rid of the binge or feel that the binge is, you know, makes you a terrible person, to actually take that opportunity to be curious. What's going on for me? What am I craving? What am I looking for? What do I think this is going to give me?
Yeah, what am I needing that I'm not getting in my life right now?
Mm. Oh, I love this. I can totally, yeah, I'm totally going to be looking out for that now. In my life and trying to ask that question.
Yeah, I'd love listeners to get in touch with us and tell us where they might see the restrict binge cycle show up in their lives as well.
Yeah.
On reflection.
I feel like a compulsion around binging for some people could be fatigue. I think that a lot of women and a lot of folks run very exhausted and tired. Mm. And what they really need is sleep and rest. But I think we can fight that. And then so instead our body is saying, okay, then give me some energy if I have to find a way to keep going. And what we might actually need is a nap or to go to bed earlier, to find ways to be able to sleep more.
Good point.
200%.
Yeah.
I'm almost crying thinking about it. You might need a rest. It's like, oh. See, that ties in with my whole productivity thing too.
Yes. Yeah.
Lots to work on there. And speaking of which, what can people do about it? So we've spoken a little bit about this, but I'd love to hear your views, Jen, on what people can do about it. Step one, hit the pillow.
Take a nap.
Well, for one, learn from yourself. Have there been other areas of your life where you have felt some success and getting out of this binge restrict cycle? And what were things that you did to help yourself find kind of some more ease around that? And so use your own inner wisdom. The other thing might be to try this experiment around, what if I not act on my urges to restrict? And as hard as that is, and as difficult as it can feel to tolerate that, what if I can run an experiment with myself around trying it differently, collect some data, run a little science experiment and see, how does it go differently? Does your worst fear really happen? If you eat breakfast and you eat lunch, does your worst fear happen that you binge at night? Maybe, maybe not, or maybe it's different. And can we learn from this? I think everything that we can do to tame down restriction.
I like the idea of looking at it like a scientist, because that takes the moral judgment out of it almost, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's yeah, cool. And I think there may be things that are safer for you to run these experiments with. So, Hannah, I know I told you, I think I told you about a friend of mine years ago who was working, she had an eating disorder and she was working with a therapist. And I remember her assignment was to not make her bed for a week. I never made my bed, so I couldn't understand, like, how is this an assignment? But she was somebody that was just so hard on herself and just had such perfectionistic standards that the idea of not making her bed was one that was emotionally, that was pushing her. I don't know where you stand on the whole make your bed, not make your bed thing, but she was a make the bed thing. And that was a safe one. She couldn't touch food. I think it was probably too hard for her to start doing food challenges. So she said, yeah, I will try this, not making my bed for a week. And whatever fears that she had about, oh, well, then I'll get lazy. Oh, well, live in filth. I mean, none of these fears materialized, right? She just never made her bed again. Right? Like, wow. Like, oh, great. And so I think that was a nice way for her to like challenge the restriction and then reassess once she's out of the cycle. For her, it was just restrict, restrict, restrict.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful. So maybe pick an area which is not so emotionally charged for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So noticing where restriction might be, or even binging, because that gives you information as well. So noticing where it turns up in your life, thinking about what you might be needing instead, or, you know, what you might not be getting that you want, and then try and kind of push out the tolerance a bit and do little experiments in a safe way.
Yeah. And remembering that if it's uncomfortable for you to sit with that feeling, saying feelings don't last forever, I can distract myself. I can use other coping skills and maybe planning ahead for that. Okay. What am I going to do if I'm feeling really upset? Maybe I tell a friend that I'm going to try this experiment. And so I might call her, and I've done these calls where I'm like, I just need distracted. Can you just tell me stuff? And then he's like, sure, I'll tell you about my day. Well, first, these are good friends, good family members, right?
I guess for you and them.
Yeah. Because they're like, yay, I get to tell somebody about my day. Or figuring out your coping skills ahead of time. Is there some distraction, some self-soothing? Maybe I want to practice my breathing exercises or mindfulness exercises so that if I'm having a hard time sitting with those feelings in the moment, I have some skills that I can call on to help me get through the, you know, most feelings last 15 to 20 minutes and then they do seem to lessen in intensity or they change.
I love that because I think a lot of us can relate to having that feeling of unease and perhaps even if we really think about it, distress when we want to binge in a certain way and feeling like we can't kind of manage that. So it's about increasing our distress tolerance and trying to open that window of tolerance a little wider each time.
Yes. And window of tolerance, this comes from a theory, and I'm blanking on the name of the therapist. I can email you the name, but it's looking at people and how trauma impacts our ability to manage stress. And so the theory would say that all of us has this window that we can stay generally emotionally regulated. We can breathe, we can kind of stay where we can feel like we can stay in a generally, I don't want to say controlled state, but that we're not going to act or do things that we would regret later, that we'd say, oh, that was on impulse.
The front of our brain is like in the room at least.
Yeah. And so what can happen though for people is they can find that if the stress gets higher than what they can tolerate, they'll hop outside of that window of tolerance. The bottom of the window is a frozen, shut down, numbed out state. Or I'll have people who will say, I just have this incredible urge to fall asleep. I just get so sleepy. And that would be another example of falling down this bottom of the window. And then the top is hyper-aroused. So maybe you're really anxious, jittery, impatient, yelling, crying, and you just feel really overwhelmed. And the more trauma that we've experienced in our life, it makes our window of tolerance smaller. That window can change in size. So the more we build up coping skills, the more we work through the traumatic experiences that we've had in our lives, we can help that window get bigger. And so all the more reason to be building up coping skills like breathing exercise, mindfulness exercises and skills, and pulling in friends for help and learning how to speak assertively and tell people what we're needing. Because then when we're in these moments of stress where maybe we're feeling an urge to go back to old coping skills like restriction or binging, we can say, what if I try some of these other strategies instead? And that can be a way of helping us to feel more regulated and able to manage the stress that's happening in our lives.
So rather than thinking I've got this urge to binge and I'm a terrible person for wanting to do it, but I just want to do it, and then, you know, restricting at some other point, you're taking that moment and actually trying other techniques. And yeah, so you, because I guess it can feel sometimes when you didn't kind of deny a binge, as it were, sometimes I think that, you know, then you get that, you're kind of like on the wheel again in terms of,
I'm glad you said that because I would be focusing more on the restricting side.
Okay.
And you've got to let happen what's going to happen on the binging side, because we know that the binge isn't the problem, it is the reaction to the problem. So the focus is going to be on the restriction.
Right.
So the part of you who says, I am too busy, I cannot eat until this is done, or ooh, I don't eat breakfast, and or getting, having a lot of anxiety around the idea of eating and wanting to restrict, saying, okay, I got to tune in on what is happening to me right now and how am I feeling? And I need to be giving myself food, because this restriction is driving my emotions in a way that isn't me being able to be my true self. Right? I'm riding the wave of restriction and binging.
And I think a lot of us have experienced this urge to have control in our lives because the world has been so unpredictable the last 2 years. Have you noticed that too?
Yes. I think that eating disorders and disordered eating gives us an illusion of control. And we've got to be real honest with ourselves. Are we really more in control? Does it really give us that thing? And I don't, I mean, obviously I'm saying I don't think that it does, but asking yourself that with some curiosity and say, what helps me? Because what comes to, what's behind wanting control? We want safety. And say, okay, what really helps me feel safe in the world? Is it control, or is it other things like supportive relationships and having a community and taking care of ourselves? And
oh, I love that. Yeah, that's such a good question to ask yourself.
What helps me feel safe and supported?
Yeah,
I think about in school, like, okay, if I control my behavior, I am rewarded, I'm a good kid, or if I get good grades and I get the gold star, okay, I will be successful because I have like achieved this thing and I've controlled myself and I am promised all the good. And at least that's what it seems to be taught in the United States. I don't know about New Zealand, but
it's all right. We went through the Industrial Revolution too. We're in the same place.
And saying, okay, is that really true? And are achievements and external measures of success really what leads me to feeling fulfilled in life? For me, achievement isn't my top value.
Wow. I feel like you've given both of us so much to think about conversation. It's been so amazing. Thank you. I've got my brains like whirring away right now. Where can people find you, Jen, to sort of, tell us about, Instagram, what your Instagram handle is, your website?
Yeah. My Instagram handle and website are the same, Dr. Jen Hardy, Jen with two N's. And from either of those places, well, from my website, you can find all of the places where I've done media interviews. Like, I will post this link on that site. And I also have an e-school that has some courses. Most of them are career-related courses, but I also have a course called Mend, and that's on improving your relationship with yourself.
I've been eyeing that one up. Looks great.
But of course, you're welcome to just follow along on Instagram with my daily writings. I mean, honestly, since the pandemic has started, it's my daily reposting of old posts. But I've been kicking around long enough that, yeah, they're like year old posts. It's like, oh, what was I writing about a year ago?
Well, they're still completely relevant.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally recommend everybody check out your Instagram, where you'll do little prompts for people to think about in their lives, little notes on post-it stickers, which I love. And the Mend course does look absolutely incredible. And if people want to go to your website and find out more about you, I urge you to do that. And yeah, we just thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Broadening our view on binging or quote-unquote emotional eating and... just doing a deep dive. That was awesome. You have been listening to Bod Almighty,
the podcast that gives you practical how-to steps towards body acceptance and confidence.
You can find us on Instagram at Bod Almighty Podcast.
Please do get in touch to let us know if you have any questions or suggestions. We love to hear from you.
From both of us, thank you and goodbye.